Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief for the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. Lucky for us, he joins us weekly. The films are Moynihan, The Children Act, and The Old Man and the Gun. Hi, David.
Hi, Jill. How are you doing this week?
You see, I'm not even... It's such an easy sentence. I'm not doing it.
Well, that's okay. I know you do. You love to make sentences or even paragraphs out of our titles. But, well, actually, today we have three films which are pretty different from each other. But I guess that a couple of them at least deal with public affairs, with matters of state, you might say. And the first of those is Moynihan, which I want to touch on briefly. It's a new documentary just coming out right now, directed by Joseph Dorman and Toby Pearl Freilich. And it is about, you guessed it, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who was a public intellectual, who was a senator from the state of New York, who was ambassador to India from the United States. Yeah, all kinds of positions over the years. He actually came out of humble surroundings, which surprised a lot of people. Came out of a very sort of a working class environment with not a very, or you know, lower middle class maybe, without a very happy family life. And this surprised people later on because he did seem to have this sort of patrician air about him. But he became a patrician. He was a self-made patrician who distinguished himself for all kinds of pursuits, intellectual and political and otherwise. He was controversial. He was a fairly liberal Democrat who nonetheless worked in the administration of Richard M. Nixon when Nixon was president. He was involved in one of his lifelong causes was working on behalf of the poor. He felt that poverty in America was an absolute curse and couldn't understand why it was allowed to persist, which is, by the way, still an excellent question now. So that was something that he very, very much was passionate about. And for a while, he actually had Nixon and even the Congress on the very verge of passing a sort of a guaranteed minimum income for all Americans. And then that didn't quite happen. And then obviously things turned in far more conservative directions in later years. But he worked closely with Lyndon Johnson. He worked closely with Richard Nixon. He was a pretty flexible person, but through it all, he kept his principles and particularly, again, his concern for the poor and his wanting to help the poor and so forth. So the documentary Moynihan recounts all this in an amazingly conventional and ultimately rather dull manner. This is a totally 100% by-the-numbers documentary. It doesn't say much of anything about his private life, except a little bit about his modest origins, and every once in a while it's sort of mentioned that, oh yeah, by the way, he had a family of his own and stuff like that. But mainly it deals with his professional life, with his career, with his political principles, with the occasional controversies that erupted around him, particularly when he once used the phrase benign neglect, and this had him attacked ferociously by all kinds of people on the left. It gets into all that stuff, and if you're interested in politics as I am, you'll find this a very sort of instructive and worthwhile documentary to sort of catch you up and remind you of Moynihan's accomplishments during his fairly long life and his quite long career. But again, as a movie, it is really not very interesting. It is just straight ahead by the numbers, rote stuff. It sort of takes a step by step, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and that's fine. But not if you're looking for excitement at the movies. If you're looking for instruction at the movies, then Moynihan is the movie for you. Turning to what I think is quite a bit more interesting film as a movie, we get to The Children Act. And in this case, act is not a verb. Act is a noun. This refers to, and this is an English movie, and it refers to English law, an act that was passed by the Parliament, and that has to do with the rights of children. children. So it is the children act in that sense. Children is the adjective and act is the noun. And we have here, this movie was written by Ian McEwan based on his novel. And I regard his novel, which I read quite a long while ago, The Children Act, as, you know, it's a fairly minor work. I like McEwan's writing quite a lot. I don't think the Children Act is a major film. But it's a major novel, but it's about a very interesting subject. And the movie is really very, very, very well done. I think it has a few missteps along the way. But it's what we don't see all that often these days. It's a quiet, very serious, very thoughtful movie about stuff that, you know, that's really interesting to think about. So The Children Act is the story of basically a judge or a justice. Her name is Fiona May, and she is played by Emma Thompson, a wonderful actress who is almost always excellent, and she is just fine in this movie. And she has a very, very busy life. I mean, she is a justice in a very high court in England. She is married to a professor named Jack, who is played by Stanley Tucci, who isn't always good, but who is quite excellent in this film, I believe. And their marriage is shaky. We get that idea from the very, very beginning. And it's mainly shaky. And this is a sort of a reversal on the normal sort of stereotypes that we expect in movies and in life, I suppose, where it's often the man who is spending so much time with his work that he doesn't have time for his wife, and she begins to get discontented. In this case, it's the wife who is spending way too much time on her work. She just can't ever take a single minute off. There is so much important stuff going on at the court, and she has to represent people, she has to make decisions about people, and she has to constantly be working on these cases and so forth. So she is the one who is really, really, really busy, and her husband feels neglected. And one day he announces to her, and this is not a spoiler because it's fairly early in the film, I'm going to have an affair. And I'm going to have an affair because you don't have any time for me anymore, and we don't even make love anymore, and you can't really blame me for doing this. Well, she is not at all happy about this, and she wants him out of the picture immediately. But we can really understand both of their points of view. She wants a faithful, loving husband, but he wants a wife who will pay some attention to him and not be taking all this time off. Well, wouldn't you know, time off from him, wouldn't you know that right at this time when her marriage is approaching what might be a real crisis, a really important case comes along that she has to decide right away. And this is really the crux of the movie. The marriage business is a sort of a subplot. The main crux of it is the story of this, deals with this young man. Actually, he's a teenager, just almost at the age of majority. He's just barely short of 18 years old, and his name is Kevin Henry. His name is Adam Henry. Kevin is his father. He has leukemia. And he is in the hospital with leukemia that is almost certainly going to kill him very, very soon, unless he has surgery. And the surgery absolutely requires that he have a blood transfusion. But he and his family are Jehovah's Witnesses, and they do not believe in blood transfusions for religious reasons. So he is refusing his blood transfusion. So the justice in the court, Fiona, must now decide whether she is going to rule that he must have this blood transfusion despite his religious principles and thereby save his life. Now, he is refusing the blood transfusion himself. She is arguing, among other things, or she is believing, among other things, that this is the influence of his parents who are sort of forcing him into this. But he is saying, no, this is his own individual decision. He simply agrees with his parents about all this. And so that is really what the crux of this movie is. It is about whether she is going to force this young man, basically a teenager still, into having this blood transfusion that will save his life. And she decides to do something very unusual. We are told in the movie that it's very unusual, and I believe it. She decides to go and visit this young man, this teenager, Adam, in the hospital, and get a sense of how he really, whether he's mature enough to make a decision like this and what's really going on here. And that starts a personal relationship between the two of them. Now they actually know each other. And as the movie proceeds, I won't tell what happens, but this relationship between the two of them, and particularly his seeing her as a kind of a surrogate mother, which in a way she's sort of acting as by taking this personal interest in his case, this becomes something which is fraught, emotionally and psychologically fraught for the two of them. And eventually the movie wends its way to a pretty interesting conclusion. So we have a movie here, which has basically two main strands in it. There's the story of the sort of approaching crisis in Fiona's marriage, and there is the story of her very personal involvement in this case involving this young man. And I find the whole subject of the movie, especially the part about the court case, to be really, really quite fascinating. It's very much about the rights of parents, about the rights of children who are not really children, but who are virtually on the age of becoming legally adults, and how all this relates to literally matters of life and death. So there's very interesting issues raised in this film to think about. The movie is a very, as I said already, a low-key, quietly enacted drama, and that right there is very much to its credit. Directed by Richard Eyre from Ian McEwan's screenplay based on his own novel, as I said, and it is very much against the grain of so many of today's movies because it is quiet and thoughtful. And even though it doesn't develop an enormous amount of dramatic or psychological momentum, I found it quite riveting from beginning to end. So The Children Act, I really do recommend it, and I'm delighted to see a movie of this seriousness and thoughtfulness actually, you know, get into regular movie theaters. And that brings us to our third film for today, The Old Man and the Gun. And this is a movie which very much stars Robert Redford. And Robert Redford has announced his retirement from movie acting. Now, he's 82 years old. You can easily understand this. Then again, it's not always 100% clear that people stick by these sorts of resolutions. Clint Eastwood announced his retirement from acting quite a while ago. His last performance, and Clint has never been famous, you know, as a great, brilliant actor, but his last movie, which is in a movie called Trouble with the Curve, is maybe the greatest performance of his whole career. It's just amazing. And so then he announces he's retiring from acting, he's retiring from directing. And yet right now he has almost completed a movie as both actor and director at his advanced age. So you never know about these things. Robert Redford has announced his retirement from acting, and if he sticks to that resolution, then The Old Man and the Gun will be his swan song. And it's a very, very lovely swan song at that. In it, he goes back to robbing banks, the way he did all those years ago in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He plays a real-life guy. This whole thing is based on an article that appeared in the New Yorker some years ago. A real-life guy named Forrest Tucker. And Tucker was a bank robber and a very successful bank robber. He did get arrested from time to time and get thrown in prison, but he managed really, really often to break out of prison, including once when he was something like 70 years old. He escaped from San Quentin. So this is a guy who age didn't seem to slow him down very much. And what's interesting about this particular bank robber and prison escape artist is that he is really a very, very lovely guy. He carries a gun, but he never, ever uses the thing. He treats everybody very nicely. He conducts his, this is one of the little ironies which is brought out pretty explicitly in the movie, he conducts his robberies in almost a gentlemanly fashion. So it's kind of interesting. And also in the film we have the cop who is after him, played by Casey Affleck. And if the character Forrest Tucker, played by Robert Redford, seems to be forever young, still robbing banks and still escaping from prisons at a pretty advanced age, the character of the cop, John Hunt, played by Casey Affleck, is forever old. He is already burned out of his job. He's only in his 40s, and he's sort of tired of the whole thing. And getting to sort of be on the hunt for Forrest Tucker kind of rejuvenates him and makes him feel that he cares about his job again. So in that way, it's kind of an interesting contrast between these two guys. We have Sissy Spacek, who has a cute meet with Robert Redford near the beginning of the movie and becomes a good friend of his and learns gradually about what his actual career really is. We have a couple of henchmen of his, Danny Glover and Tom Waits, play them, and various other characters around the edges. Also, John David Washington, who is the son of Denzel Washington, and who was so wonderful in the current Spike Lee movie, Black Klansman, has also a fairly small role in this film as another police officer, etc. So The Old Man and the Gun is Robert Redford's probably his last movie as an actor. We'll see about that. And again, it's a very gentle and quiet movie, especially for a movie that deals largely with bank robbing and somewhat with prison breaking. It's told in a very laid-back and relaxed way that really suits the advanced age of its protagonist and that just the long and illustrious career that Robert Redford has had. I've always regarded Robert Redford as somebody who suddenly became a good actor somewhere around the midpoint of his career. Before that, I've always felt he was just sort of a handsome face who never seemed to get very deeply into any of the roles that that he played. But then somewhere around the time, I think, of the movie Havana, he became a really interesting actor and has remained one ever since. I don't think The Old Man and the Gun is one of the finest movies from his late career. 5 years ago, there was a movie called All Is Lost, a very underrated movie in which Robert Redford is the only actor, the only character in the entire movie, which takes place on a wrecked boat in the middle of the ocean. If you want to see Redford as absolute sparkling best, go see that movie. But The Old Man and the Gun, as minor an exercise as it is very amiable, and there are worse things a movie can be. Co-written, or actually written based on that New Yorker article and directed by David Lowery, whose last film last year was the very interesting film A Ghost Story. It's a relaxed, charming little film. I hope Robert Redford does do some more acting, but if he doesn't, this is a very lovely way for him to say goodbye to us all. And that is my story this week, Jill.
How amiable. Thank you very much. David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films Moynihan, The Children Act, and The Old Man and the Gun.